This is Robert Cappuccio. Welcome to the Self-Help Antidote, a weekly dose of reason, perspective, and insight, where we challenge conventional thinking and explore authentic strategies and insights around personal transformation. Our commitment to you is to bring you some of the world's leading experts in the domains of fitness, wellness, coaching, and behavior change, separating fact from fallacy. So this was a little bit different of an episode. Me and Tiffany just skipped the pleasantries and jumped straight into the heart of the conversation. We started off with the weirdest stuff you've ever seen in the gym. And then we moved on to dating and relationships. What happens when you date a resume or a checklist and you miss out on the right type of person? And should you be friends with your exes? Enjoy.
We should do an episode on the worst things you've ever seen in the gym. I reckon you'd have lots of stories.
I didn't realize what the gym business was actually like when I first got out into the world, because my first real job, shit went down in that job. And like, I have to change the name of the company. I have to, you know, change names to protect the innocent or the guilty in this case. And I saw brawls breaking out in the middle of the gym, like a bar fight, but a gym version. Like I've seen doors come off the hinges with people. There was one guy, I should probably save this for the episode. One guy fell through the ceiling because he was spying on people in the tanning beds. And he came crashing
you
down.
You are joking.
Another guy who I wasn't there, caught him breaking into lockers.
Oh my God.
And you know, you're in trouble when you're sitting down and it's like everybody's standing around you. You're in a chair. They look like they could have been the cast for The Sopranos. And as a kid, you ask nervously, "So are you guys going to call the police on me?" And they look at you and go, "We don't call the police here."
Oh.
And the blood drains out of your face going, "Oh God, please call the police." It's like the shit that went down in the club. And it's like, I would go out as a presenter and visit all these clubs around the world. Nobody ever got the shit kicked out of them. Right. It was very, very rare. The ambulance wasn't constantly called. There wasn't all of this like outrageous drama that could have been an HBO series. I was like, oh, wow, okay. Because even going into a more quote-unquote upscale experience in the 1990s, so I went from Brooklyn, North Jersey, Staten Island, like as, for people listening, as Sopranos of an environment as you can possibly get, into the Upper East Side of Manhattan. And, you know, very fashionable and the elite. But crazy shit went down there as well. And then you get out to the rest of the industry. And it's a bit of a colorful industry. You have quite a lot of characters, but nothing like that. I was like, oh, this is kind of actually somewhat normal. These are like normal people. And by normal people, I don't mean that I thought the people that I was working with, well, they were abnormal, but I love them. I adore, like the first love of my life. And she was the second love that I've had. I met in the gym.
What do you mean first and second?
What?
First and second?
10 years apart. A decade later, we decided, you know, we screwed it up so bad the first time. It only makes logical sense to give it another go. Yeah. And
how'd that pan out?
Well, we're no longer together. She is, if I had to sum her up, she's spectacular. Very complex. I am a major fan of this person. A lot of drama around us and probably between us, but what a spectacular person. Mm. You know, that's not, just because somebody is not right for you doesn't mean that something's wrong with them.
Do you know what I find with what I hear when you speak about your former partners is you have always have the ability to separate the drama from the person. I don't think I've ever heard you not speak highly about your exes.
Well, there are some people I've dated where I'm like, what was I thinking? But when I'm talking about a legitimate ex, like someone who it wasn't dating, it was quite further along and more committed, I've been really lucky. Because I hear stories and it's like, it's interesting because every time somebody has an ex and it ended badly, the ex was a sociopath. They were a narcissist. It was never the other person. They were completely blameless and victimized by these horrible people. Like just once, I'd like to hear, my ex. I was a complete narcissist. I'm kind of struggling with psychotherapy. So yeah, I was working through a few of those issues. They just ran for it. Lucky they got away. You never hear that shit. Like me, I am honest. I am lucky. Because first of all, you look back at the people I've dated and you might be tempted to like, I kind of do a double take, look at them, look at me and go, what the fuck were they thinking? Like, I don't understand. Like, this is a mismatch. Could you, Bobby Cappuccio, punch any more above your weight? Anymore. It's like, what? This doesn't make sense. It's like, and I was about to say something like self-deprecating, but it could be universally offensive. So I'm just going to hold my comments. But they, not only that, like the first love of my life, she's in her 50s now. She still looks like she did when she was in her 20s. I think she might literally be a vampire. We went out during the day quite a bit. Anyway, so maybe not. Maybe she's got like one of those daylight rings. How does he know that? Never mind.
I'm a geek. Daylight ring?
It's just like, I don't know, like when vampires in films are out and they can't explain like why they're not bursting to flame. Well, they got a daylight ring. Oh, how convenient. But anyway, so yeah. So that, but they like, they've always been these really complex, strong, highly intelligent women that to one degree or another, I'm still friends with my exes. I haven't had that many people I've been in deep, serious relationships with, but the people that I have been, they're extraordinary. It's not like, oh, that's someone who I used to love. I love them. Not
how
like
have you found,
I want to be with them, but I'll always love these people.
We could do a full episode on this too, but how have you found the love transition from partner to friend in those experiences?
Easy, it's a lot hard. Less sexual, to be fair.
Oh, well, that's disappointing.
Some friends, you know.
But like, do you have to step away for a period of time, let things kind of settle, then come back as friends, or is it?
It depends. There's two instances that I'm thinking of right now where that's definitely the case. And there's somebody else who I wouldn't call a great love of my life, but I loved them and adored them. And like the moment we weren't together, I was so ready to just transition into friendship. But then there were situations and pain with two particular people I'm thinking about where I had to back away. In one situation, they backed away. And it was years until we reconnected. And then with another person, I had to back away because it was just so much pain that I was not dealing with. It was almost like, yeah, I'm not talking to them. I'm not angry with them. As you know, I just want them to be happy. If they're happy, what is it to me? How it's like, and my friend Joe, she was actually someone who was on my podcast, Joanna Meneses. She's like, you are so full of shit. So at that time I was in this complicated friendship with someone. And she was outside chatting to another friend of mine. And Joe caught me looking at her through the window. And she was like, she's not Sybil. And I was like, what do you, she's like, before you pretend you're over this, you have to reconcile what happened with Sybil. And when I was like, I remember we got into this huge fight. I love Joe. But I was just like, not willing to go there. And then I had left to go to visit a friend in Surrey, in the UK. And it hit me. It like, I was behaving badly at a dinner party. And then it hit me later that night that I was just, cause this friend was a mutual friend of Sybil. And I was like, oh man, I'm really damaged by this. Like, I am profoundly hurt and brokenhearted. And it was only when I confronted what I was actually feeling that I was able to say, okay, let's meet up at ping pong. And not meaning like, let's have a game of, let's settle this over a game of table tennis. Ping pong is, it's a fusion chain restaurant. and we were able to sit across the table and just talk things over. You know, and there was a lot of tears and storming away from the table. And, you know, she was cool about it. No, it was her. And we were able to just start reestablishing, like, okay, this is who we are and this is where we are. And this is our friendship phase of us moving forward.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, we live in different countries. She's got a family, but like we've been able to maintain a friendship.
Yeah. What do you think people need? I should leave all this for an episode. I think it'd be a really interesting episode. Do you think everyone's like, what do you think people need when they're transitioning? I mean, I know people at the moment who are separating who are great friends still, and both just landed in a place after a period of time where they were like, we're just really great friends and really great housemates, and that's probably not enough. And, you know, it's interesting to see how things pan out. And I always wonder, because we always talk about, we don't know what we're in the middle of. We don't understand, or we don't have perspective about what we're in the middle of. And when you're talking about change and heightened emotions and potential triggers of abandonment or insignificance or whatever it might be. I remember years ago I lived with a boyfriend and I broke off with him and he had to move out of my apartment. And on the day that he moved out, I was crying because he was my best friend. You know, I really, we got along really well. We never fought, but I was like, this is not enough. Then this is not forever. And I remember a couple of weeks later him coming back to me and being like, I thought, like, what's going on? I thought you were just going to change your mind because you were crying. And, you know, like, he didn't understand. So he was perceiving my hurt and pain that, you know, I just was going through a thing. So, yeah. What do you think, though? Like, what do you think for most people, for the most part?
I think it's about honesty.
Yeah.
Honesty with yourself as to, one, what you're feeling and what you're needing in the moment. Two, what actually happened. And also, in what way were you responsible? And I'm not saying fault. Like, it's okay, like, when two people just don't work out. Yeah. But there's always a role that you played in it. And here's what I'm not talking about. I remember when I was a kid, we all went to Burger King, me and my adopted mother and stepdad. And she got his order wrong. She thought the fried fish was a healthier choice. And so she got it for him. And he wanted a burger. And he opened it up and threw it in her face.
Oh,
and
my
it
God.
Stuck to her glasses. And he threw the tray over, and then there was drink that spilled all over. Yeah, if you got somebody doing that to you, no, it's not you, it's them. completely them. Fuck that person. But I'm talking about when there were hurt feelings, there wasn't overt abuse or betrayal. It just didn't work out. Like, what role did I play in it? Because that allows you to go, wow, here's what I'm learning from this. And it allows you to be grateful for the person and the experience and how you've grown as a result of it. So you see this person as someone who's benefited you. And you don't have to communicate with everybody that you break up with. Like, it's okay to let people go and love them from a distance or just wish them well and not see them again. I've chosen and desired to keep a relationship because I think these are cool, intrinsically valuable people that I would have wanted to be friends with. I mean, probably in sleep with at some point, but even if we were never together, I would have at some point just been like, as a matter of fact, like my wife now, when we went out on our first date, after our first date, she was in a place where she was getting out of a relationship that was not great. And I was such a spectacular and charming first date that she was like, I do not want to go on a second date with this guy. And she was like, why don't we just be friends? And the reason why we went on a second date is because there was no hope in my mind. Oh, if we're friends, she'll really see that. Nah, whatever. And to be fair, I was dating a couple of other people at the time. And I was like, I would love to be your friend because I think you're smart. You're quirky and weird. You're stunning. I could see myself just enjoying hanging out with you and not caring if we hook up at all. And then it was, hey, I'm in your neighborhood. Are you doing anything? And I was like, oh my, well, okay. Dude, why'd you pop the melatonin? Go downstairs, down some coffee, get your shit together. It's on. And then it just progressed from there. But it's totally, it's all okay. You know, I think we have so many, if you read a Facebook thread, it's like, how do people even date? There's all these rules and it's like,
yeah, well, I was going to say that, like, even the idea around, dating multiple people, when is what's dating and what's a relationship or when does it, the assumptions people make and talk to people, when you hear about people dating people from online apps and just the responses or the rules or the experiences that happen. And it's like a fucking minefield.
Like the post, if you've ever been betrayed and then it's like, oh my goodness, this perspective, it's like, wow. My friend, Amy, not my wife, another friend, Amy, she said something brilliant. She's like, sometimes I wonder how people date at all. Where I'm from, it's like two people get together. If they like each other, they don't define it. They just keep hanging out. And at some point they realize we just want to hang out together in this respect. And that's it. There's no, because I have had friends where I thought, obviously, they were charming, witty, funny, cool, really good looking, and they can never like be with anyone. They would go on all these dates and nothing would work out. And I'm just like, okay, maybe they're just like dating really stupid men, or maybe these men are duplicitous and what they're looking for is not what they're getting on the first date. I don't know. And then you talk to them, it's like, just hearing about your dates, I'm exhausted. It's like, well, I really liked it, but I knew it was the first date. And on the first date, this is what's supposed to happen. And on the second date, and it's like, when he opened the door for me, he didn't put his hand on the small of my back. And I find that very manly to guide me in at the small. And I'm just like, and then when they do wind up with someone, it's because they meet all the checks. It's like, oh, check, check, check. They're everything that I'm looking for on paper. And then 6 months later, they go, he's totally not for me. And I did it because you were dating not a person. You were dating a resume.
Yes.
I'm surprised you didn't come out of your dates with after he slept over with tons of paper cuts. Because it's just get, and I understand that there's like emotion is not enough. And I understand there are certain things that have to be in place, but it's like, but they got to do this. And on the third date, they need to do this. And it's like, I've had people tell me like on the second date, like, oh, on the third date, you know what happens then? If it's like, so you're already planning sex in the event that the third date goes well, because that's the rule. Oh my day. Like, how do we even date? Like, I'm tired just even talking about this.
Yeah.
Just get on with it sometimes. You're talking about overthinking, right?
Yeah.
That's just my perspective. I know people have a lot of strong opinions around dating, and that's cool. But if we're going to make some, like, there was a conversation around attractiveness. Like, here's what I find attractive about a person. It's like, so what we find attractive about someone is not necessarily what we are attracted to. So we might say, well, what I'm really looking for is someone who is responsible, hopefully gainfully employed, and they have a great sense of humor. And if they're kind, but then we meet someone who is not like that, and there's this biochemical reaction.
Yeah.
And we start rational. And I've had friends that do that. I've had ex-girlfriends that do this. They're like, well, I'm not dating. Oh, there's this guy. And, you know, we start hanging out and he's the wrong person for me. And he is everything I'm not. I'm like, oh boy, here we go. But you're really attracted to him. No, absolutely not. Never in a, okay. And then like 2 weeks later, oh, I'm with that guy. Oh, the guy who's completely not right for you, he's going to destroy your life. Yes, that guy. It's amazing. It's like, so there's so many things that we're not even aware of. A lot of these things, and again, it's probably going to piss people off. You can probably like chalk it up to heredity, natural selection, and gene mutation that are driving us to like certain people at certain times versus other people. And we're telling ourselves all these stories about the characteristics. And I'm not saying there are not definitive attributes that we like and it does influence us. I'm just saying there's so much, again, complexity. We might not know. So sometimes you just got to go date, see what happens. And, you know, some of it's going to work out. Some of it's not.
I wonder how much the story that we build in our minds and the digital interaction of our lives these days, how much that has changed the landscape of, you know, like we're so much more dissociated from our emotions and interpreting them. And we're so like our emotional intelligence, it's changed. I'm not saying we're less emotionally intelligent, but there's so much more pulling. Like, my phone is giving me dopamine hits every day. We can build a sense of an attraction or a relationship of sorts by text appearing on a screen, and the story that we allow our mind to build with a toneless text, with texting. And the idea of, and then we get onto these visual apps and we look at, you know, what are the, we're just matching biases, but we're not getting that chemical interaction. We're not getting into somebody's energetic space and having a conversation. So we're kind of already building walls in a way, because we're doing part of the groundwork and setting up expectations to a level of comfort before we even meet people.
Well, first of all, our expectations are probably ridiculously high. And then when expectation meets reality, that's going to decrease levels of dopamine. So that's one issue we're dealing with.
Yeah.
Another one is we're not completely present enough to be attuned to the natural flow and chemistry as it emerges. And I've had a friend of mine. So the problem with online dating is you can be sitting down with someone who, and I think like online dating is fine. Like, some people use it as like takeaway service for sex, but you know, other people like have met like their partner, their spouse.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I've been on online dating, but one of the things that you have to contend with is you can be sitting with someone who's great, but, oh, this is just Tuesday. I have Wednesday tomorrow. Then I'm dating Thursday. then, you know, I'm pretty excited about Friday. We've had some really good banter. It's like you're always looking for that next fix. And that one, it's an interesting way to frame who people are for you and what relationships really mean. It's like, I'm always looking forward to the next, to the next, to the next. How present am I amidst these sometimes unrealistically high expectations? Sometimes you just got to sit with people. You just got to sit in a situation and be open to what emerges.
Yeah. Even look at how even just friendships evolve and who ends up being someone that becomes a really deep friendship and apply that to relationships. Like we tick shit off of these lists or we dismiss. But I think a lot of people I've noticed will try dating apps and they'll say to me, oh, they get so annoyed at people not respond. Oh, I matched with this person. I had a couple of chats and now they go MIA or they don't respond or blah, 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 blah. And, you know, years ago, if a friend said that to me, I'd be like, they're such dicks. Like, guys are just dicks now. They just don't respond. Like, what a bunch of dicks. But now I'm like, oh, well, you know what? I've got a whole bunch of issues. And sometimes I jump on an app and I'm like, all right, I want to meet someone and then have a bit of a chat. And then life gets really fucking busy. Or I go right back into my shell and I get a little bit anxious about it. And I'm like, oh, I'm so not ready. And it's not bad intentions and I'm not being a dick. And it's like, we don't know what's going on. And we're judging people because there's this unanswered
life can
reaction.
Happen. And they're not just chatting with you. They're probably chatting with multiple other people, right? Unless they're not very desirable and then no big boss there. Anyway, but it's very easy through like comparison and through the social dynamic virtually to have your ego bruised or to start to feel like something's wrong with you. And that's a dangerous perspective to have. And I don't want to say like you have to date with a thick skin, but there's an air of you've not met this person. Even if you connect with someone, it's like, oh my God, we've had amazing bands or whatever. You haven't really met in person. There is a big difference. It's kind of like when you're hiring someone, you do the phone interview. The phone interview is not to see if you're a match. It's just to screen them for anything absurd. It's to disqualify people. You know, I've had very interesting phone conversations. I'm like, wow, you're not really good at this, like applying for a job thing. And it's kind of the same where, you know, I've gotten friends like that where online dating, we had such banter and chemistry and there was like mutual attraction to the photos, and then things would happen and we wouldn't be able to get together or we'd get together like, wow, in person, I so like you. And at the same time, not into you at all. And the feeling's mutual.
Yeah.
Or sometimes you meet someone online. It's like, oh, yeah, they seem nice enough. And you meet them. It's like, wow, you're spectacular. So no matter how well things are going or not, you don't really know until you meet somebody. And I'm not talking about like a catfish. I'm saying that you really don't know what the chemistry is going to be like. And you have to be open and not take it personal and just have fun and just go, like, what's this experience like about? You know, I've rocked up and knew instantly, okay, I'm probably not into this person. Let's have a few drinks. Let's have a few laughs. So there's no reason why you can't have a really great night. Anyway.
Dating coaching with Bobby Cappuccio. Might make a series.
That's just the world of coin. Like, let me tell you something. Like my wife and I think any of the exes I'm talking about right now would probably tell you I'm no expert in dating. They'll probably admit I don't really know much about what I'm doing, to be fair. And they'll probably be like, what was I thinking? Being with the, well, probably one. She's always very complimentary. And I appreciate that. Thank you. But like they would say, I'm not an expert in dating. I went from being a person who thought I was undateable because I thought even after multiple facial cranial reconstructive surgeries, I still viewed myself as someone who was disfigured and deformed. And if a woman would talk to me, I would think, oh, they're just taking the piss in a cruel way. And if someone wasn't interested in me, rather than, oh, well, we just don't connect in that way, it was like, oh, of course, I'm disfigured. I don't even look normal. So I had that thing going on. And then if I would get into a relationship, watching my stepfather totally control and abuse my adopted mother, my response was to be so overbearingly romantic and sensitive and supportive. It's like, I can't breathe over here. It's like, this guy is just intense. So my first and second love, like, just talk about her. So when we dated 10 years apart and we were talking, and she was in a very polite way trying to put it on her, but saying it was just so intense, so much. And I was so young and I didn't. No, that's full on. Right. And it's like, she was like, I didn't know what to do with you. It's like, everything was so deep and meaningful and special. And it's like, you would pull out a chair and, oh my God, this is the same chair. No, it's just a fucking chair. Sometimes a chair is a chair. There's no deeper meaning to it. And it's just, I remember a guy, she's like, oh man, she's like, you were like this huge guy and you just had this whole manly appearance. And then you were just this like soft and that's great, but it was 24/7. And for me, that was how you date, because I saw the horrors of the other end of that. It's funny, because the second time we were dating, I remember we weren't in an argument, but like there was a little bit of contention. She turned around to me. She said, how did you get like this? She's like, I did this. Oh my God. Did I do this to you 10 years ago? Is this my fault? And it's just like, at that point, like whatever argument was coming, it's definitely over now. We just started laughing so hard. Like, yeah, probably. It's got to be you. What else could it be? It couldn't be my issues. And it's just like, so you have these, and then I just evolved at some point where everything was okay. I'm like, I'm okay. I'm okay with who I am, what I look like, you know, and I accept people openly and I suspend expectations. And it's like, if I go on a date with someone, I'm okay if they don't like me, and I'm okay if we really hit it off. And if we're just friends, it's whatever. Like, however this date ends, I just want to do the most I can to make sure it's fun and it's cool. And I'm okay. Whatever happens, happens. And when you're in that space, you're in a completely different dynamic mentally when you start dating people. I think there's a level of challenge there. There's a level of freedom. Somebody doesn't feel constrained by your expectations. They can be themselves. And I just think that creates a very different element. And I'm speaking from that because I've had so many experiences. I've done so many things wrong. And then there were so many times where I would go into a date being disingenuous because I was trying to recapture something or my interpretation of something that once was with somebody else. So I've done all these really weird things. And it's like, I just got to a place where dating was something that was so comfortable because I was able to, unless you showed up and you were really obnoxious, I had this unconditional positive regard with you and total acceptance of who I am. That's a different place to date. So it's like, people have these strategies and these things to do on a date. It's like, oh, for fuck. First of all, you're not even focused on your date. That's a shot. If you're thinking about what to say, like, so I used to hang out with this guy and he's a great guy, but he had this shtick and his whole thing was around, he had these questions he would ask every date and he had these sayings. And then he would like do this negging thing where you kind of make fun of someone to keep them on their toes and make them feel insecure. If I'm making fun of you on a date, there is only one reason. I am really into you and I am finding things about you endearing. And for me, I am playfully flirting with you. And that's not for everybody, and that's fine. But if you are on the same wavelength, you're going to start hanging shit on me. Mm. What I don't want to do is show up and try to make you feel insecure for some fucked up power dynamic, because it's like, wow, this person's really attractive. Let me show them I'm unaffected. Like, what the fuck?
Oh,
like, are you
God.
Even on this date? You're so in your damn head.
Yeah.
Wow.
I remember a friend once years ago getting ready to go out on a date, and she was so anxious and saying, "Tiff, what if he doesn't like me?" And I was like,
"Honey,
what if you don't fucking like him?"
Yeah.
But, so I'm super anxious. Like, I'm not dating. I don't date. Don't like dating. And I get hyper. I can get hyper vigilant. And I'm starting to sit on the other side where I'm like, what if I don't like this? The expectation of happening to decide whether or not I like someone and to be in that, it's just fucking almost too much for me. But it was interesting because she was kind of the polar opposite. It was like, what if he doesn't like me? Not worrying about whether she or not she yet likes him. So interesting though, isn't it? Like what we're going in, focusing on or worried about or.
It's so much. It is so much to unpack, and it can exhaust you.
Yeah. My advice is just rescue a kitten. Just rescue a cat.
That is really good advice. Just rescue a cat, because your cat. People are like, oh, your cats don't give a shit about you. You've not had the right cat.
Yeah.
Cats are so diverse in their personalities. There are cats that are self-centered little bastards. I will admit, but there are other cats that are just, so my wife was one of those, I'm just not a cat person. And then we moved into a neighborhood where the population of cats outnumber human residents. I don't understand what's happening here, but it's weird. It's kind of like cats that they're all strays, and there's hundreds of them, and people take them in, put a collar on them and feed them. And you know, the cats want to be out. So they're kind of half and half. And every once in a while you will lose a cat to a coyote, and that happens. God. And it's traumatic because we know who all these cats are. And, you know, people have tried to take them in, but like the cats are like not having it, but they're out in the street and they're very interactive. And my wife has developed these relationships with these specific cats that on her walk, like every day, they're part of her life. They'll come up to her, they'll chat to her in their little cat language. And she's like, I want a cat. I so want a cat. She's become this cat person now. They're amazing. I love cats.
I never knew I loved cats.
I'm obsessed with dogs.
Yes.
They're very different, but I can't say I'm a cat person. Dogs, you can do more things, because cats are, if they're street cats, they don't want to be domesticated most of the time, unless they're really young or they're in a really bad situation. They like their friend, but if they're domesticated, it's like, okay, I'm not going outside that door. This is my territory and I'm staying in the house. I might peek my head out the door and then pull it straight back in. Where dogs, it's kind of like, where are we going? We're going for a ride in the car. Oh, we're taking a ride on the train. What? Weekend in the country? Fantastic. So dogs are kind of like more of an all-around companion, but they are, the both of them are extraordinary.
Mm.
Yeah. Wow, we've covered like pets we love, dating, and we've covered like cognitive biases again and like the necessity of paradox. This has been quite an extensive episode.
It has. Well, we had a lot to catch up on. I don't even know what time we started, but it is a very lengthy episode.
This is like a Netflix miniseries. We should release this every Friday.
Pretty much is. Like, we've been on the call for almost 2 hours, but I don't know when I hit record because we had quite a long chat before we...
I know. We just got to add something about, like, the dark side of the Force, and we've got, like, another Star Wars saga that we could sell to Disney. I want to talk about that. Talk about relationship dynamics and, like, what it takes when a good person... I think that's an episode to talk about. We're always fascinated with what happens when a very good person turns very bad. Like, how does that happen? Like, when you take a look at Anakin Skywalker or Breaking Bad is something that a lot of people got into.
I don't watch either of those.
Yeah, I never got into Breaking Bad, although it was highly recommended. But yes, me being a geek, very much into Star Wars. And like, I find Vader far more interesting than when his persona was Anakin for a lot of reasons. You kind of feel bad for him when you, but anyway, so without getting into another subject, I am going to say thank you so much. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Tiff. Thank you, audience, for hanging in there, and we appreciate you.
Thanks, crew.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Visit us at theselfhelpantidote.com to share your feedback, insights, and recommendations on what topics you'd like us to explore in the future.